Hi, everyone. I'm Brené Brown, and I'd love to tell you about my podcast, Dare to Lead. Innovation, creativity, building a better, more just world, all of these things require absolutely courageous leadership, especially given the complexity and chaos of the world right now. The Dare to Lead podcast is a collection of conversations with change catalysts, culture shifters, some troublemakers, folks who are really daring to create and change the world. I hope you join us.
Taco Bell CEO recently announced that the Cool Ranch flavored. Do you like how I say that word?
Cool Ranch flavored.
Doritos.
I've been saying they should get into French cuisine for the longest time.
They're doing it. They're bringing in the Cool Ranch reach. So. And they're doing it. And like, I feel like we've waited long enough. Don't you? Cool Ranch, y'all. It is the new shell that they are bringing into the mix. I'm excited for the good flavor because everybody knows that ranch goes better with tacos than nacho cheese.
So I thought they already had a Doritos taco.
They do, and it's nacho cheese, not Cool Ranch.
Oh.
Pay the fuck attention.
Got it.
My name is Justin McElroy, and I know the ranch flavor of the week.
My name is Griffin McElroy, and are we talking about different flavored taco Dorito shells?
My name is Chris Plant, and I love pizza taco Dorito.
Come on. Welcome to a show that we make every week called The Besties, wherein we talk about the latest and greatest Matrix movies and video games and everything, taco flavors, everything, and we just swap stories and
swap spit.
Animatrix films. Did you guys see the Animatrix?
I did. I saw them. They were quite good.
They were really good. I love the one where the two people were in the dojo,
yeah,
and they were like sexy fighting, like cutting each other's clothes off.
Yeah, there was a lot of muscles and sinew.
A lot of sinew. It looked like Final Fantasy: The Spirits Within. Like, I always wanted to see Final Fantasy: Spirit. You remember fucking Buscemi's character from Spirits Within? Always
no.
Wanted to know what it looked like under there.
I was gonna talk about Amazon.com being down, but now it's back up. So,
phew, goof, dodge the bullet.
Goof derailed.
Goof aborted.
Hey, guys, can I talk about the game I've been playing this week?
Please do.
I've been playing Antichamber, which our review, which I pinned, just went up. It was a 9. There it is.
You gave it a 9.
We don't really need to talk about anything else. Because that 9 tells you basically everything you need to know.
Yeah, I never, ever, 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 ever read reviews past the number.
It was actually really hard. I don't want to, like, pat myself on the back, but it was a really difficult game to review. And I thought I did a pretty good job.
Why? Because of the puzzles?
I didn't want to.
You don't want to spoil it.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, the whole thing about Antichamber is that a lot of people, like, compare it to Portal. Because you do have a gun thing that you use to solve puzzles.
It's a bad comparison.
It's not an awful comparison. Like, the general structure of the game is kind of the same. Only Antichamber is not really linear. Like, Portal is linear. It's sort of an open world where everything is sort of interconnected, and you will cycle around and, like, return to rooms once you discover new functions of the device you have. And the device lets you move around these bricks around the world in different ways. But there's never any explanation for what you are able to do in the game. So really half the game is solving the puzzles using, like, interpreting the rules as you know them. But the other half of the game is sort of discovering those rules in the first place.
Oh, let's narrow this down and sort of have it. Like, is there an example you can give? Because right now,
the thing,
it's,
That's vague. The thing, like...
I get not wanting to spoil it, but, like, some, like, early
so
on
I'll,
thing.
I'll give a small example, but then I'll talk about why I think it's not like Portal at all. An example is, you have this little device, and you can take a blue cube, and then you can plug it into a blue slot, and that will open the door.
Okay, that was hot, by the way.
But then you'll need more blue cubes, and there aren't any. And how you discover them, or how you discover you don't need them at all, is, like, kind of the puzzle of the game. And to kind of expand on that, why I don't think it's like Portal is... Portal's a great puzzle game, but especially Portal 2, really... That game is so well designed that you don't have to know how to solve puzzles to get to the end. Like, it's always very carefully directing your attention to where you should look to solve the puzzle.
Right.
Like, things are just lit certain ways, so it's like, oh yeah, I should plug
and then,
one
like,
thing there and plug
black,
thing there.
Black walls you can't put portals on, but you can put portals on the gray walls. So really just looking around for where the gray walls are will give
sure.
you sort of a rough idea of, like, where you're going.
Sure. So I think Portal's one, very linear, and this is no fault against it. It's making you feel smart. It's an empowerment fantasy that's also a puzzle game. Antichamber's the exact opposite, where if you can do something that breaks the game, you're rewarded for it. So if
that's
you can
thing.
Find out something
that's
that is the opposite of what it wants you to do, you can skip a large chunk of the entire mm-hmm. game.
Well, is that intentional or is that just
it's
bad?
It's intentional.
Yeah.
No.
That's the thing. That's what I love is, like, I'll give one example. Those cubes that you can place, pretty, like, if you are clever about it, you can figure out a way to put one on the wall and then jump up to that cube and then jump. As you jump, you can reabsorb that cube and then shoot it back up on the wall and land on it a little bit higher. So you can sort of cheat your way.
Like Mega Man, to, like, make shooting those platforms.
Sort of, yeah. To like, figure out a way to cheat your way up the wall. And you figure that out. I was actually really disheartened the first time I did that. And then I realized, like, oh, the game knows that you can do that. Like, the game was totally, totally prepared. Because later on, there's a puzzle where you have a single cube. And it's like, good luck, fucko. And you have to basically, like...
But that's all it can do? You could just shoot the cube out and, like, step on it?
But here's... Mm-hmm. He's really not going into much because I know he doesn't want to ruin it. Another way of saying it is... Because it's non-Euclidean math, as Justin was asking before the thing, nothing is based in reality. So just because you came from point A doesn't mean when you turn around, point A is still there at any time.
Okay.
And that's the point is to never trust immediately what you've seen or where you came from because it's constantly changing.
So how do you have any sense of anything?
So the antechamber is an actual room that you can return to at any time by hitting the escape key. And what's neat is, like, there's no UI in the game whatsoever. There's no... The menu is represented by a wall in the antechamber with all the settings sort of splayed out on it, and you just fire at them. And it changes the settings of the game, but also in the antechamber is an interactive map. And every time you discover a new room, it shows up on that map. And that map also shows the different entrances and exits to that room. So it, like, gives you a good idea of there's two entrances in that room. The one, like, way that you discovered that led you all the way back to the beginning of the game, what probably isn't the only way to do it, and it's probably not the correct way to do it. So, like, if you get screwed like that, you can just press escape, return to the antechamber, and then immediately warp back to that room. It, like, all the puzzles are self-contained into the rooms.
Got it.
So, like, the map is giving you this constant sense of knowing where you are. And it also empowers you to just, like, wander around and dick around for as long as you want, because ultimately your dicking around will come to a point where, like, you have done everything you can do with the brick device that you have.
Yeah.
And so, like, you have to return and look at the map and say, okay, what haven't I solved? And then really, like, dig your heels in and think about what you've seen in the world that's going to help you, like, get through the puzzle.
Do you get, like, a Fez vibe from it?
No.
In the way that, like, it doesn't explain a lot of the mechanics? You just sort of have to figure it out?
Do you get a Fez?
That's a good question, actually. Do you get a Fez?
You get a very small car and a membership at the BFW.
Yeah. It's a hard game to compare to anything else. Like, half of what's cool about the game is, like I said, like, interpreting what you see in the world around you. The other half is just, like, it's fun when the game, like, pulls a fast one on you. When you, like, walk through a door and then you like you hit a dead end, and you're like, oh shit, and you turn around, and all of a sudden the door that you walk through exits out to a different thing. It's like how did you do that? Like as a level design, it doesn't make any sense.
Did you see what it's built in?
It's built in Unreal.
It's built in a Quake engine.
Yeah.
That's what... I mean, I don't know a whole lot about development, but I wonder if also the engine was chosen because it's one that is great with teleports. Because, like, just designing it, how many things are asked to teleport you instantly without you noticing it...
Yeah.
...is crazy.
It's, it's genuine... What's great is, like, you're constantly... It is constantly doing stuff like that to you. It is constantly, like, tricking you.
Yeah.
And so the whole time, like, you sort of are, like, writing it off, like, oh, that was a fun trick that you just pulled on me, game. But in actuality, like, it actually just taught you what you need to know to, like, recreate something to solve the puzzle that you're stuck on. But, like, you just didn't even think about it. Like, it's hard to explain what I mean, but, like, because there are no tutorials, like, telling you what to do, you sort of have to figure it out on your own based on what the game shows you. And it doesn't show you much, but it shows you enough. So, like, the trick is to, like, figure out what's important and what's not.
Interesting.
It's a really neat game.
I won't be playing it because it's PC only, and that makes me sad.
Could it work on a controller, Ditto?
I think he said that it will eventually, but it's not there yet. But, I mean, it's not... I don't know. It's not like you need, like, twitchy controller reflexes or anything like that.
Yeah, but you want to chill out on a couch or something.
Yeah, if you just want to hang on the couch with your bros.
Maybe. I actually really like, putting my face, right next to my giant monitor and putting on headphones. Because sound is also really important. There's one puzzle that's actually kind of close to the middle of the world, if you can consider the world as having a middle, that has a clock in it.
Is Patricia Heaton there?
Oh, my God. Was that a fucking The Middle joke?
You know you don't have to say everything, right? Like, just because it's a collection of syllables.
You know what's the sad part is that the things I do say is strongly edited. So
wow,
the cream of the crop.
That's the best.
Wow.
Anyway, there's a clock in this puzzle in the middle of the room, and you can hear it. It's a very loud clock, and whenever you're like a mile away, like in a room completely, totally far away from that room, and you like solve a puzzle and like you go through a hallway and turn a corner and you hear that clock, you're like, God damn it. Like, it's about to drop me back in Clock Town, which is like so not where I want to move forward, and I'm back at that fucking clock again. Like, I don't know. It's devious, and it's honestly like it's a little frustrating from time to time to like solve a really hard puzzle and be like, I'm a super genius. And it's like, actually, this exit is a dead end that takes you all the way back to the beginning of the level. So you're not actually that smart.
Hmm.
But it's neat. It's got lots of Easter eggs in it. Lots of hidden rooms that sort of show you like some background stuff on the game's development, which is neat. And it's got an ending that is completely batshit.
So you beat it.
Yeah. Yeah. I solved every goddamn puzzle.
Do you have to do that to beat the game, Ditto?
Huh?
Do you have to solve every puzzle to beat the game?
Oh, no. I don't want to spoil it. There's sort of a game mechanic that will make you think you have to do that.
Yeah.
But you don't.
How, this is going to seem like a weird question, but how personal does it feel? A lot of these sort of, one-man games have you get a real strong sense of the creator. Is that the case here?
I don't know. I don't...
Is this a one man? It is, right?
It's Alexander Bruce did I think almost all of it. I think the score was composed by somebody else. I'm not sure what like supplementary development work went into it. I think the only like metaphorical significance that I got from the game, and like I am so fucking awful at divining that kind of stuff, but there are these little placards hidden all over the game. And they're constantly, like, giving you sort of subtle hints. Like, you click on them, and then it's like, life has a way of surprising you when you turn your back on it, or something like that. And that can be just giving, like, a very, very vague hint that, like, if you turn around, something is going to change behind you. But sometimes they're just fucking lies. Like, sometimes they aren't true at all, and they'll make you think you need to do something that will, in fact, like, screw you over in the long run. But they are everywhere. There's dozens and dozens and dozens of them, and they are either rarely useful or they tell you the answer to the puzzle that you just solved. So, like, I don't know. I'm sure that has some sort of significance of, like, it's such a unique game. It could be relating to, like, people telling him how to make games, but all of that advice is sort of useless in the end. I don't know. But, like, from a lore perspective, I don't know that there's much there, but from a game design perspective, like, it's absolutely genius.
Is there a narrative of any sort?
Kind of.
Yeah, she's like the mom, and she's trying to raise this really, you know, the
I'm gonna fucking time. Choke you out. I'm gonna fly to New York, and I'm gonna throw you downstairs.
So the middle is a hot new series, but Andy Chamber is different, and it's a game. You can get that on PC right now for $15. It's on Steam.
It's on sale too. Like, it's gonna go up to 20.
It's on sale from 20 to 15.
Right. I think if you're going to play it, and you should, you need to do it soon. Because they're really, like, those mechanics that I told you that you need to figure it out, once you figure them out, it's not, I don't think, as engaging. You know what I mean? Then you're just, like, running around, and then it's just sort of like every other puzzle game ever. Right. So, like, I don't get this game spoiled for you. Like, get on it as soon as you can.
Before. Is there a single thing people will tell you that will spoil it, or is it like, don't...
There is a single game mechanic that I could not figure out for roughly 2 hours, and when I did, I felt like a goddamn super genius. And, like, it basically cracked the rest of the game wide open for me.
Alright.
Also, the end of season 2 ends with a pregnancy scare.
Can we hang up on Russ Frushtick?
Let me see if I can't hang up on Russ.
Is there a way to hang up with him without hanging up on all of us?
I don't think so. How was your last week? Anything?
Hey, we're at the middle of the podcast now.
Guys, I want to talk about the medical malady that I've been suffering for the last month.
What is it?
My eye has been twitching like a mofo.
Yeah.
And I thought it meant death, because I'd Googled it. Well, here's the thing. If you have something going wrong with yourself, probably shouldn't Google it, because 9 times out of 10, you're going to die within a week, according to the Google results. In this case, people thought it was a giant tumor or something horrible.
Sure.
Anyway, it was awful. So I made an appointment to see a neurologist the other day. And I go in the doctor's room. What is it called? Office? What
do
I
have?
Doctor room.
Doctor zone.
And he's I'm telling him, you know, the symptoms that, like, one of my eyelids is twitching. And he's like... Okay, and he does some tests, you know, does balance and, like, neurological tests. And then at the end he's like, okay, so this is pretty normal. It'll probably go away. You know, I have a lot of patients that have this all the time. Like, just the other week, you know, I have this guy in, like, once every couple months who has the same exact thing, but in his arms. Like, his arms are always twitching. And, you know, he's a cop down the block, so, if, you know. And I was like, wait, so a police officer has twitchy arm syndrome? And all I could think was, we're doomed.
What did it turn out to be? Did you got potassium deficiency?
No, it turned out that I'm dying. So by the time this podcast airs, I'll probably be dead.
Oh, don't play with my emotions like that.
No, it's he's just said come back in a couple months. I think he just wants another copay.
it's hard when your wife's a doctor, because I'll have all kinds of these little maladies like that, and I'll say to her, like, hey, listen, sweetie, I don't want to worry you, but my eyelids been... Because this was happening to me recently. I said, my eyelids been twitching a lot. What do you think's going on? She said, I think sometimes your eyelid twitches.
Yeah, okay. So do you think that's class in medical school where they're like, here's a giant list of things that you could just blow people off on? Yeah, yeah. So I'm feeling hot and sometimes cold. Yeah, that's probably nothing.
But, like, you watch fucking House, and somebody's like, my eyelid's twitching, and everybody's like, oh, he's just got potassium deficiency.
And right, House and he like, looks, and no, House looks inside.
The blood in his brain has cancer. Right. And then like, everyone else is like, no, you're out of your mind. He's like, I am out of my mind. That's the kind of thinking outside the bun doctorship that helps me crack all these medical cases. And then the person fucking dies because they left the hospital.
And then he pops like 500 pills.
He pops like 500 pills. He's like, I told you that brain blood had all kinds of shit wrong with it.
Yeah, he's never
They should
happy,
make a
though.
Dr. House game.
They have.
I think they did.
It was terrible.
I was kidding.
Guys, did I tell you guys about that Mr. Case Files? Speaking of Leah Thompson, did I tell you guys about that Mr. Case Files game I played?
No.
It was good.
You tried to. Was it Yum Yum good?
Yumma Yumma. I liked it a lot. If you like
Leah Thompson. It's like a find a hidden object game, isn't it?
Well, you know, the Mr. Case Files did used to be like that quite a bit.
Okay.
Now they do more like puzzle. First off, I only played it because like sometimes Mr. Case Files have FMV in them.
This is no exception.
This is Leah Thompson plays a spirit medium who works for a show called Ghost Patrol. Ghost Patrol is hosted by a Chris Angel type figure.
Now, when you said Ghost Patrol, are you talking about the fan club for Taylor Hicks?
No, I think you're thinking of Soul Patrol. Yeah.
Okay.
It's a common mistake. No, Ghost Patrol and their lead guy is a Chris Angel type figure whose big catchphrase is, "Come at me, ghosts!" So you could treat it to him saying that sometimes. And they used to be more find the hidden object, and that is still like a very small part of it, but it's really more of like an adventure game now. You go from location to location and solve some puzzles, and then you also, in this one, she gives you psychic drawings that you have to match with different locations, and using those you unlock more of the story and you try to find out why this town is cursed. It's like not at all demand. It's like the anti chamber. It's like not in any way. Like,
did you have to fight with the 12-year-old girl over the last copy of this or?
Well, it was a digital download, so no. Okay. No.
That saves you some shame.
So yeah, I mean, I know these are probably for nonnies or whatever, but I thought it was pretty good. I like FMV.
Now, you like FMV. I've never heard you...
Never mentioned that before?
I've never heard you express that particular...
I just bought on eBay a in-package, in-the-wrapping copy of the only FMV console ever made called the Power Max, which I did not know anything about until this week, and I was thrilled to learn its existence.
Was that just like a port machine for Night Trap and...
No, it is a... This is great. It is a console that works with your VCR. So you play a video.
Oh, my God.
And then your system has a receiver, an IR receiver, that you attach to your screen somewhere.
That is unfucking believable.
Yeah, and then so the system doesn't have any sort of UI or anything. It is literally just a score that you get after watching the video and shooting at targets on the video.
And that sort of is the whole reason I don't understand your fascination with FMV games, because they're essentially just a movie.
Yeah.
Like, you're just watching a movie, so why wouldn't you just watch good movies instead of, like, really poorly acted?
There is something about the idea of being able to interact with...
Local community theater actors in Nebraska.
The level of interaction is like hitting fast forward on a DVD.
That's not true. On that one, yes.
Have you played Mad Dog McCree 2?
Yeah.
I was more asking Russ because of fucking course you've played Mad Dog McCree 2.
I've played Mad Dog McCree 1. Are they different?
Mad Dog McCree 2 is probably the hardest video game I've ever played in my life. The final duel that you have to do with Mad Dog McCree... In Mad Dog McCree 2, I guess this is Ghost.
He survives
or some
the
shit.
First one.
It's so fucking indescribably difficult. Like, it makes those crazy bullet hell shooters look like Mystery Case Files. Like, it is the hardest gameplay segment, and it's like last 2.5 seconds. And every time you get shot, you have to watch a Nebraska community theater actor be like, "Well, guess need to have a little itch your trigger finger," because he doesn't know which accent he's doing. And you have to do that like 700 times before you finally like get the one muscle movement down correctly to pull out your gun and shoot him in the head. It's so, you have to do it twice. It's so fucking difficult.
There was a
why would you need to shoot a ghost in the head?
I was watching the I said watching. That was a Freudian slip. I was playing Who Shot Johnny Rock on DVD, and the DVD versions of those games, those American Laser games, are amazing because it's like you use your DVD remote to move a cursor around the screen until it's sort of, but not really, on the person you want to shoot, and then you press enter on your DVD remote.
Right, and it can never remember exactly like where you are in the, because I remember playing Time Traveler.
And yeah, Time Traveler was like that.
It's like that, but it couldn't remember how many time reversal cubes you had.
Yeah,
you could sort of cheat the system a little bit, get some extra time reversal cubes.
One of the shots of Who Shot Johnny Rock, you shoot a guy on a balcony, and it like pans to his face, and then he falls off the balcony and. I realized when it panned to his face that it was Rusty Dillon, who, as we all know, was the actor who played Mad Dog, actor slash stuntman, who played Mad Dog McCree. And it lingered on his face for just long enough that I thought, that's kind of like a nod to fans, I guess, because they're like kind of pointing out that Mad Dog is there. And then I thought, no, probably not, because that would be crazy. That doesn't... They would not do that at all. Maybe they just shot him on the same day, and he was around. They do use the same bartender in both games, which I did appreciate. That great like guy whose mustache is taken over his face. And
does he wink into the camera?
Wasn't he in Lincoln? Wasn't he the lead role in Lincoln?
Yeah. Daniel Day-Lewis was the bartender in Mad Dog McCree. Everybody knows that.
Well, partner, welcome to town. We've seen our share of hard times here. But we shall overcome them.
You know what? All I want is for there to be a Hoarders episode starring you, Justin, and you to just try to explain to the Hoarders people why you need to keep all these games.
Now, Justin, you have 6 copies of Wirehead. Can you please explain your actions?
What if something happens to them? I am under no illusion that these games are lost to time if I don't archive them. If I don't try to preserve them.
Just like the newspaper from 1986.
What?
That's what hoarders do.
Oh, right. Gotcha. Okay. Let's talk about Ni No Kuni.
Okay.
I've been playing that. I know we've all sort of dipped into it. I've played about 4 or 5 hours now. It's hard because if you go to the main menu, then the play timer keeps going. But if you pause it proper, then it doesn't. So it's kind of weird. But
it's... I'm having it is so, every component of this game seems like it was made for me. Like, Studio Ghibli? Ghibli?
Ghibli?
Studio Gimli, like, I love it. Love that. Level 5? Yeah. Dark Cloud? Sure. Love it. Pokemon-style monster collection? Like, oh, now you are speaking my language. I think maybe it's just because I'm coming off of Persona 4 Golden, which I put so much time into. Like, it's hard for me to bounce directly from one JRPG to another, because, like, it's such a commitment of time. But, I mean, I like the hour and a half or so that I've played. I just feel like I haven't even scratched the surface.
Yeah, so what I've played I sort of found somewhat interesting, because I like the combat mechanics.
Can you describe those?
Yeah, I mean, it's action-y in the sense that you can run around. It's not like straight turn-based where you're, like, standing still waiting for your turn. You actually can run around each arena and cast spells and stuff like that, and all the spells take time.
It's almost similar to Final Fantasy X, except it's not so much built on, you know, setting up these automated chains and
yeah, I guess sort of a Chrono Trigger. Well, Chrono Trigger is turn-based, but in terms of, like, using the arenas...
Yeah, your placement is as important as anything else.
Right, exactly. Which I found interesting. What I found less interesting was essentially just how much of this game you're just watching. Like, so much... Like, the first hour is, like, 45 minutes of cutscenes, and I just... I mean, I guess that's a JRPG thing. It just does
not interest me at all. No, I know what you mean. I mean, it's hard because it... It's definitely, you know, people always say
You know what I mean? You're an FMV addict. That's all you do.
That's different. Those are cutscenes that I have some control. I don't want to talk about this. I know what you mean. And it is like a part of, as you said, it's part of the genre, but that doesn't necessarily make it like better. Like sometimes I only have a half hour to play video games and it's like, well, okay, I just watch cartoons. And it's beautiful cartoons and well written and well performed cartoons, but it is like, it's kind of a stop-start at the beginning there.
Yeah.
What I don't particularly care for is, like you said, like sometimes whenever I play Ni No Kuni, I'm really only playing it for like a half hour or so because I rarely have those, you know, multi-hour chunks to like sit down and play something anymore. And what bums me out about Ni No Kuni is that it has this system where you can save anywhere if you're like in a city or out in the map. But, like, when you're in a dungeon, you have to revert to, like, save points. And it seems so weird to me that they would... I think it's crazy that games still have save points in 2013. It seems like such an antiquated system that was, like, designed into the game based around hardware limitations.
I think there's something to be said for, like, in Dead Space, for example, has save points. And I think there's something to be said for the level of tension that it creates. Like, a lot of people had an issue with the way Dead Rising had saves, but I kind of liked it because it made, like, you can't just save before a final battle, like, and whatever, you reload the save, no big deal.
Okay, but design around it, like Dark Souls did. Dark Souls, you can just fucking turn off your Xbox and it'll pretty much remember where you are. It just uses the save points as sort of, you know,
yeah, checkpoints. I think the solution to that, which I think the Fire Emblem games does, is you can do, like, a temp save, which essentially saves where you are, and when you reload, you lose that save.
That is what touches, like, I would be way more down with Ni No Kuni, and I would have put so much more time into it if it was on the 3DS or Vita, or iPad, or something like the JRPGs in my mind are, I have always preferred playing them on handheld platforms, because then I can do them without, like, occupying the entire television for hours and hours at a time. Like, it's such a commitment to spend 60, 70 hours on your Xbox 360 or PS3. I've always found that medicine a little bit easier to swallow when you can.
And this game actually came out on DS in Japan.
Yeah, it's not exactly the same a version of this.
The problem is I don't see myself having, like, huge chunks of time to dedicate to this game, and I am going to have to continue, like, consuming it in these half-hour blocks, and if I keep up that pace, I'm not going to finish it unless I do that for four straight months. And, like, that's kind of crazy to me. But that we haven't touched on, like, the game itself, which is...
Yeah, so it is a JRPG. We talked about the battle system. You play a little boy who lives in a place called Motortown, I think. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of cars there. It's the real world, basically. And for reasons that I will not spoil here, he is called into a fantasy world that, you know, he has to save because it's a JRPG. And it's one of these... there are notes of sort of like a Harry Potter vibe to it. The boy discovers he's a wizard. As you go, you learn spells which are useful in combat, some of them, and others are just used, like, in the story. So the main bad guy has his big thing is he has heartbroken people, and what that means is he's taken specific parts of their personality they need to function. Like, for some of them, he's taken their enthusiasm, and it's different for others. And you can use your magic to find people who have the piece of their heart that they're missing, that have it in excess, who have excess enthusiasm or what have you, and suck it out of them.
What?
Yep.
So you make people that are really happy sadder.
Just kind of even them out. You're like an SSRI. You kind of even people out. So, like, if they're too happy...
That are too happy are just... They're kind of the worst, aren't they?
It's
You're just bragging. Take it down a notch.
Take it down a peg. And there's also, puzzles you can solve by casting fire, for example, like torches and that kind of thing. It's all weirdly menu-driven.
That was one thing I noticed about the combat, is that I couldn't help but think, like, why is there not just shortcuts to all this? Like, the second you want to cast a spell, and this is all happening real time, you've got to sift through, like, five levels of menus to get to that spell.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
If you are into this genre, I think it's very well executed. I'm looking at it, and when you compare it to, I'm still making my way through Persona, which is like a very mature story. I mean, at least comparatively, a much more mature story. And I just don't know if I'm going to be able to. And I've been able to play it. I can play it on the bike. You know, I can play it on plane trips and stuff. And I just don't have that luxury with Ni No Kuni. Like, I can't see myself sitting in front of a TV for 50 hours or 60 hours or however many hours to finish it.
Yeah,
and I have that in my mind, right? Like, when I start it, it's already working against it. Like, I'm already thinking, like, oh God, I don't know if I can do this. And I know that if I turn it off or take the disc out just once, like, bye bye, Ni No Kuni. I'm never putting you in again.
I've actually gotten it through GameFly, and it really, you've got a point. Like, if I go 2 days without playing it, I know I'm just going to fall off, and then it's gone. Like, I will send it away and probably not play it again until I have like way more free time than I have now, which is one. I have one free time. It's Wednesday afternoons. I call it Griffin time. And like once it's out of the system, it's basically in an envelope, and then it's back to, you know, Grapevine or whatever.
And the really depressing thing about all of this is that you guys haven't, from what I understand, there's a point at which the game really hits a wall about 10 hours in, where you're like, there's like a big grind to it.
That's what Phil's review said. Like, they sort of slow down the new mechanics, but at the same time, like, the rate at which they are adding mechanics to the game right now where I'm at is almost a little overwhelming. So, I don't know.
I've just heard that it just really gets a lot less good at that point, and I will say
if you are a, you know, a fan of Studio Ghibli or Ghibli or Gimli.
I think it's Gimli.
It's a fucking, like, sumptuous feast of a game.
Oh, God, it looks amazing. Like, you would think you're watching a cartoon. A lot of times, like, it looks like you're watching a hand-animated
feature. Right, and cartoon's not exactly the right, because, like, what's so incredible about the Studio Gimli movies is, like, you go into a shop in one of those movies, and everything on the shelves has such an intricate amount of detail to it, that it's like your eyes are just darting around. And like that is what's so incredible about those movies. They have recreated that not only in the animated cutscenes, but like in the game itself. Like, everything is fucking gorgeous. Like, it's such a beautiful game to look at. And the score is incredible too. Like, that's the kind of stuff that's making me want to power through sort of my hang-ups, that I'm going to spend way too much time on this game when there's other stuff.
Yeah, but that stuff does it for me for about 5-6 hours, and then I'm like, okay, like, I need a game to be there, otherwise I'd just be watching Studio Ghibli movie. Gimli, sorry.
It's really hard to talk about this, I feel like, without sounding condescending, because, like, whenever I would, like, hear promotion about a game when I was in college, and they'd be like, it's got 60 hours of gameplay, I would be like, fuck yes, I can't wait to dip into it. But like, now I live with my fiance, we have really only the one TV with everything hooked up to it, I travel a lot, and I do a lot of gaming sort of on the go. Like, just portable makes so much more sense for me, and that's why I'm such an enthusiast about, you know, the 3DS and iPad and Vita. And so, like, the idea of a game that you have to play really hours at a time to make any headway on, unless you want to be playing it all year long, which I don't, it's a turnoff. And I know that's kind of fucked up to say, because it has no reflection on the quality of the game itself.
I think where I really actually have the biggest problem with this, with this one and length, is when you're in dungeons, and this kind of feels sort of like the save point thing, kind of like a weird throwbacky type thing. When you're in dungeons, the enemies respawn like very quickly. So if you want to like explore more, you know it's going to be 5 more battles as you make your way there and then fight your way back. And that starts to feel, I mean, that to me, once you have that like grindy sort of thing, that is not the mark of like an expansive experience. That's the mark of like you didn't you didn't balance your game so that I would have X number of fights and then be ready for the last fight.
Yeah.
Like, you left it up to me to grind and grind and grind and grind until it stopped being fun, and then, you know, fight the boss.
Also known as a JRPG.
Yeah, well, I mean, yeah, fair enough. Like, you just hope that they would take the good conventions about the genre and sort of leave the rest by the wayside. And I know that there are people out there who are, like, probably screaming at their iPods right now. And I get it. Like, if you're way into this sort of thing, like, I get how every little bit of more you could get of it is, you would classify that as a good thing. Yeah. I don't know. I feel like if I'm in a dungeon and I've already run through a certain hallway, I've already seen that, and I've already fought all the monsters in there 15 times, then it's like, you're not really showing me new game. You're just kind of throwing clutter at me.
I actually really like Zeboid in the Cthulhu RPG, and I think in the Pinning Arcade games, but I haven't really played enough of those. They're, you know, a modern RPG maker who makes sort of retro-style RPGs, but they make it so that when you are in a dungeon, there is a counter that goes down. Every time you do a fight, it subtracts by one. And then once you've killed, like, 30 guys in that dungeon, battles become optional
for
the remainder of the time that you're there.
It's very smart.
It's a very, like, forward-thinking...
That is something you will never see in a JRPG.
Well, maybe. I don't know. Like,
someday. Guys, I don't really count it,
because there are JRPGs that get around that, like in Xenoblade, which I think you could qualify as a JRPG. You can just, like, run around them. You can ignore them.
Well, and even in Persona, I think the enemies are kind of thick and slow enough that it's not tough to avoid them. In Ni No Kuni, they are faster than you. And in fact, if you attempt to run from them, they will catch you, and then they will attack you from the back and have you at a disadvantage. So, like, it does not make sense to try to run away from them. And that, I don't know, that just feels really antiquated to me.
Guys, I have a serious question.
Okay.
Is Chris Plant dead?
Hey, how you doing?
Chris Plant has literally not talked for the last 30 minutes.
Did you take a sleepy nap?
Nah, I just didn't have anything to say.
Have you played Ni No Kuni?
No.
Did you play Antechamber?
Yeah, I talked about it for a little while.
Are you having a kind of a rough day?
No, I have no comment.
What do you want to talk about?
Yeah, let's talk about you.
I'm good. Don't worry about me.
Do you want to talk about what we're going to play next week?
Sure, what are we playing next week?
I'm going to dip pretty heavy into Fire Emblem Awakening for the
future. Oh my god.
I have never played a Fire Emblem game before. And like,
I love Fire Emblem games.
Didn't know anything about it, wasn't really excited about it, and then I think they released a trailer, like, this Monday, and I was like, I have to own this game. This looks incredible.
I am a huge, huge fan of Fire Emblem games, and I've been looking forward to this for the last year or so.
What's the appeal?
I
don't.
Okay, so
just from the name, like,
trust me, the franchise alone does nothing for me. It's essentially XCOM. Like, if you like XCOM, it's essentially XCOM. You're dealing with classes of units that excel against other units, and you're equipping them with items, and you're... there's, like, crazy Japanese stuff, you build relationships.
It's intelligent systems, so it's more... It's almost exactly like Advanced Wars, only with
a fantasy approach
and, like, upgradable units.
Yeah, the big difference between Fire Emblem and Advanced Wars is that if you lose a unit in Fire Emblem, they're dead forever, XCOM.
You can turn that off, which I'm thinking about doing, because that seems like...
You shouldn't do that, because that's lame, and you'd be lame for doing that.
It would make me sad, though, if I lost someone.
You're a bully.
That's part of the magic.
Okay, fine.
It really is, like, the way I play these games is, like, old school, and if I lose someone, I'll restart the mission, because I'm a maniac. But, I don't know, it just adds a certain level of... making every single move, like, thoughtful and important, because one mistake and you, like, your, like, girl archer that you've been friends with since the beginning is, you know, has her head speared by a cannon.
That sounds awful.
It's great, though. And I'm actually the graphics look really cool.
I've got two dentist appointments next week, and so, like, I'm going to have that with me to go along for the ride.
And now, here's an important question about your dentist appointment. What flavor are you going to pick?
Like metal and tooth dust.
They usually they, like, put molds in your mouth and you ask for a flavor.
that's not a thing that for babies.
Yeah.
They've been doing it to me for years. I don't know why, but
no.
I usually get mint or pina colada.
Okay.
Yeah, is that like a fluoride based that they're doing? Like a
Maybe.
If I could get fucked up while they're like up in my gums, that would make the whole process a lot smoother.
That's for heroin flavored.
Well, Chris, what are you gonna play this week?
I don't know. Maybe Proteus? Maybe.
Did your house burn down, like right before we started?
It's gone. It's all gone.
It's everything. Everything. This whole life we built.
I'm gonna play Recovery.
Should someone play Skulls of the Shogun?
Well, we have three games. There's Skulls of the Shogun, Proteus, and Dead Space 3.
Ooh, damn.
No, Dead Space 3 isn't out until the following week, isn't it?
No, it's next week, February 5th, right?
Yeah.
Mm.
Shit.
Yeah.
I played the demo for that, and I fucking fell asleep.
Yeah. Like, welcome to the real world, she said to me. Condescending.
I have to be straight with you guys, and this is why I have tried with both Dead Space games to get up in there, and I was actually talking to a guy from USA Today that wanted to do a story. I did an interview with him last week. He's like, hey, I'm doing another story, like your comment, about Dead Space and just like how dope it is and how, and it's like, I actually had to pass him off. I was like, I gotta be straight with you, my man. As hard as it is for me to seed any limelight, I think those games are.
The demo for Dead Space 3.
Dead Space 2 was great.
Dead Space 1 was great. Dead Space 2 was okay.
Oh, you guys are crazy.
I have not finished either one. I don't know what it is, guy. I really don't.
Dead
like,
Space
I don't...
2 is like the best BioShock ripoff that exists.
It's not a... doesn't. You're crazy.
I think it's the combat. Like, I don't really like I don't know what it is. The aiming is not fun to me.
The story is goofy. In the end of Dead Space 2, when people say they like the ending, that's when I'm like, oh, okay, whatever. We're on different.
No, page. I think from a gameplay mechanics standpoint, I think those games are great, and I thought Dead Space 2 was exceptionally great.
But Dead Space 3, the demo opens up with you are on a train, and the train crashes, and you have to sort of climb around the train as
spoilers.
It falls off a cliff. And then when you get
I've never
to
seen
top,
that before in a
then
game.
Then when you get to the top of the train, you have to fight off guys with the guns that you find in the snow. And it's like,
I've never seen that before, though.
It's in the fucking demo, but you have seen it before because you played Uncharted 2.
No, I think Dead Space 3 did it first.
It's hard to say. You know, it's so hard to prove
check,
these things.
Check the record.
Check the record.
Out. Go to Moby Games. Figure it out.
Well, that's going to do it for us this week on The Besties. We sure hope you'll join us again next Friday when we will do a deep dive into some of these new titles. I don't really want to play any of them, so I might be a Chris Plant next week. It's hard to say.
No, you shouldn't be planting next week.
I don't want to plant it next week.
The little garden gnome's going to burn your house down before the show.
So make sure you join us, though, for The Besties.
Hey, wait. Before you do that?
Now you're
going to
hear
me. Hey, since everybody knows what we're playing next week, listeners, you know what? Maybe like leave a few comments about these games that we're playing on this post. Maybe we'll talk about those.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
That's a fun plan.
It's a fun plan.
I did play a reader-suggested game that was absolutely bonkers, and I couldn't
deal
with it.
Yeah, let's talk about that real quick before we go.
Goblet Grotto, which was recommended by a reader in the comments of last week's episode, is like you just took speed and thought crack would be a good idea to mix with that. Because there's like symbols and like it's all hand drawn and you're a frog and everything is like talking to you. I don't even know how to put into words.
This looks ape shit.
It was not fun.
I just dropped a link into our Skype chat and maybe you can throw that into the post, Russ.
Yeah. Okay.
So our listeners can go and click on this right now because it is. The weirdest game.
It's really weird. And it's free.
That noise you're hearing, Griffin, it does not stop.
And you could, like, fall off a cliff and you'll end up in, like, a world below. Like, it doesn't kill you. You just end up in another land.
Like Toe Jam and Earl.
And there's, like, like Toe Jam and Earl. And there's, like, symbols constantly appearing at the top of the screen and you don't know what they do. And there's constantly noises assaulting you. It's really, like, a bad trip. I've clearly never taken crack, so I don't know what that results in, but I would say probably something really bad.
This reminds me a lot of the game I'm making now in Unity, actually.
Yeah?
Yeah.
You have to collect batteries to open a door.
That sounds about right.
Sounds good.
But there's only you need four batteries, but there's only three.
It's kind of like it's America. Like
art. It's kind of like an art.
Yeah.
Anyway. Wow, this looks bananas.
Okay, so that's going to do it for us this week. Make sure you join us again next Friday for the besties. Because shouldn't the world's best friends pick the world's best games?